This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by brilliant physician leader, Dr. Malik Purohit. Dr. Purohit talks to us regularly about particularly technology issues in healthcare. Today's issue is essentially, do we need to adopt to the technology, or the technology does it need to adopt to us? And what I mean by that is, you know, some companies have done this incredible job, like Apple, of making the technology so easy to use that the adoption, it's very simple. Other companies, you look at the big EMRs, we need the EMRs. There's no way around that. We're not going back. But it's been a war to get to the spot where they're easy for all of us to use, or easy for clinicians to use. And some would say we're still not there, but there's no choice. The clinicians have to adapt to it. AI is sort of the next great frontier. Recently, we saw some nurses striking and concerned that AI is going to take their jobs. Malik, talk to us about this. Do people need to adopt an AI? Will it adopt to their workflow? How's this going to look? And what are some of your thoughts around this subject?
Yeah, Scott, first of all, always fantastic and honored to be part of your podcast series. You have so many great guests. So I'm just honored to be one of them. And also second, just a shout out for the recent conference, the Becker's annual conference a couple weeks ago. It was awesome. You guys always do a fantastic job and really left inspired with everything I learned from everybody. So wonderful, wonderful job with that. And I'd recommend that conference to anybody next year. And then regarding the question you asked, I think it's a very astute question. And I think in so many ways, sometimes we adapt too quickly to technology. Sometimes we lag behind in adopting. And with AI, there's so many things going on with it. And we use that term so globally, but it has so many specific uses and nuances to it. And each specific use case has its own pros and cons and benefits and risks and all the other things that are associated with it, that we often globalize the term, but we individualize the use of it. And I think that battle between globalizing and individualizing is where a lot of these conflicts happen. And the nurse strike recently, I think, was interesting. And especially that comes on the back door of the strike in LA with the writers and AI as well a few months ago. And I think with AI, there certainly is a reason to be aware and cautious and aware of the risks and be cautious in how we use it, because there are dangers, and especially for things like patient care. For certain things, you know, whether you're making an appointment or you get an appointment wrong or something like that, those things are minimal risk. But in terms of actual clinical decision-making for a patient, those are high risk. And also other settings like non-healthcare, like automotive, Tesla and AI, we've seen the use of AI there. And that is another area that's high risk, because if something goes wrong in the algorithm or wrong decision made, and there's a car accident, there's a fatality, there's effects to many, many people in that situation, right? And so I think there's a lot of caution to this. And I think what we really have to do is think about AI, not as a global term, as a global tool. We never think about other things, right? We never think about medications that way. No medication is the one pill to solve everything. We need to start thinking about AI in a much more specific way and say, what are the pros and cons of AI in use case X? What are the risks and benefits there? How do we do that? How do we set the parameters? How do we educate people? How do we use the right data? What are the data constructs that we use? How do we continually ingest the right data into it so that the algorithm stays fresh and accurate? And I think there's a lot of things that we have to do with AI. And then the other part of it is the human element and educating and involving people and keeping sort of a big tent and bringing people in. Oftentimes, you know, there's an article recently, and I posted on this on LinkedIn, about how physicians are slow to adopt AI. But there's not a lot of nuance in that discussion. And what I'd like to say in that part of it, it's not that physicians, nurses, and clinicians don't want to adopt AI, or that they're slow, or that they don't like technology. I think oftentimes we don't know what the risks and benefits are. We don't know what the black box, or what's within that black box of how that decision-making is coming up. And if we become so dependent on that decision-making and lose our expertise on the things that we add as value, then there's a danger that we miss something, and that causes danger to a patient. And it's, I think, physicians and others really want to use AI. They want automation. They want all these things to work. At the same time, they want to know what's going on under the surface so that they can evaluate when to take a decision support into account, when to ignore it, when to evaluate that in the context of the individual patient. And so I think, to me, there needs to be more caution around how we use AI, and how we educate people and bringing people in into the mix and discussion of it, rather than simply saying people do use it or don't use it, or globalizing, hey, use AI for everything, which I think there that risk is much higher than if we actually bring people in, customize it, individualize it to the specific use case that we're going into.
How is it going to start getting used and adopted? How are you going to actually see this interplay with humans and using AI? What are you going to see? Talk to us about that.
Great. You know, Scott, it's amazing. Like in some cases, we see like an over adoption of AI. For example, the additional safety features that Tesla has had to add in, like the camera on the inside and that kind of stuff, because, you know, you see YouTube videos of people sitting in the back seat trying to drive the Tesla fully on automated pilot, and where people have really adopted the technology well beyond its means. And then you've got other places, and rightfully so, in healthcare, where people are very cautious about it, and the adoption rates are in the single percentile range, right? And so you see both extremes in so many different venues. And I'd say driving a car, clinical decision-making, the risk is high because you could really put a life at risk, literally, in those cases. Other places like Netflix and others where, you know, the AI algorithm might give you the wrong movie, risk is very low. Push ahead and go forward with that because the risk is so low. Now, in terms of healthcare, to me, the way you bring people in is, one, you build a really good product, right? I think, you know, to me, I go back to Apple and these other great companies where, you know, Steve Jobs, when he brought out the iPhone, never worried about adoption. What he worried about is building a good product. And then people started using it on their own because the product was so good. And to me, that's the thing. Same thing is in healthcare. We often were in this mentality before of building a product, quote unquote, just good enough, or it gets the job done, right? Without thinking of the end user. Whereas in the tech world, it takes it on the other side and says, let's start with the user experience and then build around that and make it a much better place for people. And that's where companies like Apple, Amazon, Google, et cetera, have had a lot of success, as they understand the user experience, and then build around that. Whereas in healthcare, I think we flipped it the wrong way and said, let's focus on just getting the technology in and going instead of worrying about the user experience, until recently. And so now I think if we want to focus on a good product that makes sense and the user experience is accounted for, then you'll have better success. Second is the tool have the right accuracy, the right precision? Does it actually enhance patient care? Does it enhance operations? Does it enhance all the things we're trying to do in a meaningful way? And so I think that's the other part of it is, I think when we, to me, in a setting and someone said, hey, your docs aren't adopting this or your nurses aren't adopting this, my first question was, one, is it a good product? Two, does it work the way it was to work? And three, does it improve the quality of the care and the processes that we do? If we can do those three things, we don't worry about adoption rates because adoption rates automatically be high. I mean, if I come to you and say, hey, Scott, I've got a tool for you, but you know what? Hours for your workday, it's not going to really meaningfully change anything you do for your clients or anybody else, but it's kind of nice to have, and it's a nice technology. You'd be crazy to use it, but that's what we do in healthcare. And if, on the other hand, if I came to you and said, hey, Scott, got this great technology. You know what? It's going to reduce your work. You're going to have to learn it. You're going to spend an hour learning it. But once you do that, it's going to save you 30 minutes per day. It's going to automate your menial tasks, and you're going to have a much better workday experience. And you're going to go home faster. Who wouldn't use that, right? In that case, I don't have to worry about adoption rate. Everyone's going to get onto it and want to get onto it fast. And so I think that's the difference in how we use the product, how we educate people and bring them into the product, and create a big tent feeling that everyone's a part of this and growing, rather than creating this black box experience that no one knows what's going on under the surface. However, yet they're still responsible for it from a legal standpoint.
Is there at all any spots where you're starting to see products that are ready to use and work into the workflow that aren't very challenging to adopt and get going? Is there anything you're starting to see out there along those lines?
Yeah, absolutely. There are. And I'm going to be a little bit careful because in this space, I'm going to be careful. I don't outline one or two names alone because there's so many great products. But we are seeing a shift in how people are viewing what we put into the product space. Now, one name I will say is Epic, for example, is legitimately doing a great job in trying to get a better user experience. And that itself has been awesome. And then around that, all the products that fit into the clinical space really work and dovetail off of that Epic EMR model. And we're seeing a much better improvement. And I think also there's a generational change too in terms of who the developers are, who the engineers are today, because the people that are in the industry now are the people that grew up on a high-level product and user experience. So they understand that user experience need. And so now we're seeing a change generationally in how we develop products so that even in healthcare, we don't say it's okay. The doctor can work an extra 2 hours, not a big deal. The nurse can work an extra 2 hours, not a big deal. We're saying, no, this has to be really meaningfully better for somebody to use it and create a better product, a better experience. And so I think there's several shifts. One is just the attitude with which we approach healthcare. But second, the generation change in who's coming into the healthcare market and the user experience that they've had with the products they grew up with. If you were born in the 90s and you grew up with Google, Amazon, and all those things, and have seen, you know, the change from that to Uber and other things today, you're used to very easy, quick user experience. And I think that influences your way of developing the product for the next generation as well.
And how quickly do you see health systems? I mean, the EMR thing was so challenging in that the government made the decision we absolutely need to have it. I think ultimately we all agree that we needed to have it, but it certainly felt top down to clinicians and physicians. Do you think the adoption of AI in a meaningful way will be different than that, will feel quite different than that?
Yeah, great question. I think it's a great analogy. And, you know, the way we did the EMR conversion was, okay, here's a financial incentive to a health system to get onto an electronic format of some type without much discussion on what's the right type, et cetera, et cetera. And then everyone kind of went to it on their own way. It's sort of like, you know, in the 1800s when the railroads were built. Like you had some people start on the East Coast and go toward the middle, and some people start on the West Coast and come to the middle. And at some points on some lines, they had some issues because they built the railroads at different lengths and distances. And you couldn't, you know, in today's world, you didn't have that connection between the interoperability of today's world. That was the problem that they faced with the railroads is you built tracks of different sizes. So now you're coming from two different sides and you can't fit them. So you have to find some way to jerry-rig them. And that's what happened with the EMR in the first few years is that everyone had this huge financial incentive to get on as fast as possible, but without much regulation or thought or discussion in a global sense of how do we make all these things work together? Because patients aren't just at one health system. They go from A to B to C. They travel. They do other things. You know, now they're portable. They're mobile, right? So those kind of discussions didn't have the time to develop. And I get that part of that is logistics and the politics because we're trying to put a new way of doing things in and not everyone agreed. And so there's a rush to speed to market, so to speak, with the plan. But that created a little bit of a mess because now everyone did things a different way. And you had, you know, over 100 different EMRs in the space that all did things different way, different types of coding, different infrastructure, different database structure that they had on the back end. And so now we're trying to get to a place that we're trying to make all that work together somehow. And there's some major advances that have happened in the last couple of years. And I think the same thing's going on with AI to a lesser degree, because you're having this top down saying, we got to put AI in. Everyone wants to do that. We're creating these positions of a chief AI officer, et cetera. But I think to me, this is where, to your point, is do we have the right discussion around this? Do we have the right people sitting and saying, how should we structure AI? Should we structure data structure a certain way? Should we ingest data a certain way? Should we share data? Should we have a centralized data repository for everybody to work off of and build an algorithm? I think those kind of discussions are needed. And I think the sad part is in our tough political environment, it's hard to make the commitment to do those things. But I think that's where I think the government can step in and say, look, let's create a shared platform that everybody can learn off of, and then we can have a better place for the patients, which is ultimately the right thing to do. And I think that's where the push we need to do is.
Dr. Perhit, always a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I always enjoy it tremendously. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Scott. Always a pleasure.